get into a comfortable position and relax. Spend a few minutes letting your mind relax and your body relax. As you relax, let yourself just become aware of all of the perceptions, sensations, thoughts in your mind, feelings. Just be open to all of them without trying to push them away. Notice that all of these perceptions are in your awareness, which means that though the perceptions may give you a sense of dimension, in other words, the traffic noise that I hear in the distance, it is clear that the traffic is far away from this room, from the sounds in this room, which are much closer. Closer to my physical body. The sounds in this room are closer to my physical body than the sounds of the traffic in the far distance. But the sounds are not distant from my awareness. The distant sounds are as known as are the closer sounds, the sounds more near. All of them are equally known. Equally present to my awareness. So just notice this for a moment, that all of your perceptions, even the sensations of your physical body through the sense of touch, your breath, maybe you can feel a slight breeze on your skin. Rustling in the room, noise outside. All of these sensations are taking place equally in my awareness. The distant sound is not farther from my awareness than is a rustling in the room. The distant sound is farther from my body than a sound in the room. But the perception of the body, the perception of the distant sound, the perception of the rustle in the room, all are equally in my awareness. None are distant or away from my awareness. The subject and the object, the seer and the seen, the hearer and the heard. All are equally known. The subject is not more known than the object. The object is not more known than the subject. what I take to be the subject, the body is in my awareness, the physical body is in my awareness. The five sense organs, ears, sight, touch, taste, smell. These five sense organs are in my awareness. The mind is in my awareness. The thoughts. Perceptions, the sensations, all are known. So the subject also is known, what I take to be the subject, the body, the mind, the sense organs. Even the I thought. The ears know are also known. What the eyes know, what the sense organs objectify, those also are known. I am the awareness, that illumines both the subject and the object. I am the knownness of the subject and the knownness of the object. I am both the subject and the object. I am the being, the consciousness. Which gives the subject and the object their beingness, their knownness. no matter how many thoughts you have, how many perceptions, all of them are known. The knownness is the invariable self. The changing thoughts don't change the invariable knownness. Which both subject and object enjoy. Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Punaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvina Patitamastu, Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Okay, we're on verse 3.
Mukha pasako darpane drishyamanaha. Mukha pasako darpane drishyamanaha. Mukhatvat pratektvena naivastivastu. Mukhatvat pratektvena naivastivastu. Chira pasako dhishu jivo pitadvata. Chira pasako dhishu jivo pitadvata. Sanityo palabdhi swarupo ham atma. Sanityo palabdhi swarupo ham atma. This verse. Mukha abhasakaha darpane drishyamanaha mukhatvat Protectuena na eva asti vastu. Chit abhasakaha deshu jivaha api tadvat sa nitya upalabdi swarupaha aham atma.
Shankara introduces this this verse with just a nice little bhashya, so I'm going to go through that quickly in English. This is the doubt. Nanu means doubt. Doubt is this. If there is only one self, atmanah ekatva, if there's only one self, then the condition of sukha, happiness, sorrow, pleasure, pain, all of these different mental conditions that a person has, okay, these would not be possible if there's only oneself. Okay? All of these conditions, not possible. Because, says, if in all of these bodies, shariras, on all the shariras, all of these bodies here, like just in this room is enough to make the point. In all these shariras, if there is only one self, then that would mean what would follow from that would be that when one is happy, right, then everybody's happy. One is happy, then all should be happy. One is sad, then all should be sad, he says. And then he says, if one person gains knowledge, then everybody should gain knowledge. If one person is born, one is born, then everybody should be born. One dies, then everybody should die. Right? It's only one self. When one person is bound, or when one person is, if person is one is liberated, then all should be bound. Then all should be liberated. And that's not so. We all know that's not so. I can be happy, you can be sad, and vice versa. I can know something, and you don't know the same thing. Right? And wouldn't that be nice? If one of us got liberated, all of us would be liberated. That'd be great. We know that's not true. So he says, therefore, there's no possibility of there being only one self. That's the objection that he introduces with this verse. It's not possible. Like, because we would all be knowing the same thing, feeling the same thing, thinking the same thing, and that's not true. So therefore, there's many of us. This idea of one self is not at all possible. And in fact, this objection is a very, very common objection. Because it's true that if there's only one self, and I take that self to be a knower, a feeler, a thinker, if I have identified the doership, thinking, feeling, with the nature of that self, then whatever that one self knows, all would know. Right? That makes absolute sense. The problem comes in is that we are so certain that we, the adyasa, the superimposition upon myself as being a knower, a doer, a feeler, a thinker, is so strong that we can't imagine my being free of that. Okay? Myself being free of that subject-object relationship, seer-seen type relationship. So that's how he introduces this verse. It says, ityataha aha, therefore, he says. So Shankara provides all of the connecting links and all of the logic for these verses that were presented by Hastamalaka. Okay? So here's the verse. Mukha abhasikaha. Abhasika is a reflection. The mukha abhasika, the reflection of a face, darpane drishyamanaha, which is being seen in a mirror. Okay? The reflection of your face, of a face, which is being seen in a mirror, mukhatvat pritakvena na eva asti vastu, is not a vastu, means it's not a real thing, apart from the face. Right? Mukhatvat pritakvena means it's not something that has a being existence apart from the actual face. Mukhatva means the faceness of the actual face. Okay? So the reflection that's being seen in a mirror has no being, it has no reality, it's not a vastu, it's not a real substance apart from the actual face. Pritakva means separate from. Okay? So like that, everybody goes, yes, yes, that's true. You know, we can relate to that. Right? But it's a very powerful example. So he says, Chirabhasakaha Dishu Jivaha Api Tadvat. Tadvat means like that. The reflection of consciousness in the different buddhis, in the different intellects, in the different minds. Di means buddhi. So in the different minds. Like that, the reflection of consciousness, which is the jiva, which we call the jiva. Like that is the reflection of consciousness, which we call the jiva. It says, aham atma, I am that self whose nature is nitya upalabhisvarupaha, whose nature is consciousness, which is free from time. I am that atma, I am that self whose swarupa, swarupa means nature, whose being, whose nature is nitya upalabhi, consciousness, which is nitya, timeless, not subject to birth, death, not subject to change. Okay? So I am that Atma who appears as a jiva, right? Who appears as reflected consciousness in the buddhi. And appearing as reflected consciousness in the buddhi, then what I can be taken as many, but let me just go through this one more time. Mukha abhasikaha darpane drishyamanaha mukha tvat pratyaktvena na eva asti vastu. Chirabhasikaha dishu jivaha api
tadvat sa nitya upalabdhi swarupa ahamatma. I was sitting with this a little bit and taking you to something that I want to work with now in the meditation. But for now, let's just think of what it is like when I look in a mirror. If I hold up a mirror to my face, right, I see the reflection of the face in the mirror. This Drishtanta illustration, by the way, is not an exact fit, but it has a very important message, and that I want you to kind of understand this message experientially. Try to understand this illustration experientially. So we're going to try to take the illustration to your actual inner experience. Okay? When I hold up a mirror to my face, there's a reflection of my face in the mirror. Right? We know that. But now, where does the experience of the face reside? In other words, okay, this face, this head, this body, right, it has its own being. So if you just sit with your body, you can say, yes, this is a living, sentient being. It has the experience of beingness or existence or conscious being is experiential. And the experience is contained in this body, just from the standpoint of the physical body, okay? Now, when I look at my face in a mirror, does the mirror gain the experience of my being? Now, let me show what I mean. Okay, so here I have the mirror, and the mirror is reflecting my face. But the face experience, the beingness, belongs to the face, the person, and that doesn't belong to the mirror. Everybody see that? And now it becomes really clear, is here I have this mirror here. If I take the mirror away, my face is still here. The face experience is still here. Right? And in fact, it's completely here. It hasn't even changed. There hasn't been a ripple of change when I get rid of the mirror. Because the face experience of what it actually is, the faceness, that's why he uses this word, the mukhatput, the faceness of the face isn't taken away when the mirror is removed. That's it. When mukhatva means faceness, so the faceness, the being, the faceness of the face, is not taken away when I remove the mirror. Okay, the mirror adds something. It adds its own thing. It adds a reflection of the face, and it adds mirrorness, whatever the mirror is. But in terms of the being, the mirror doesn't contain that being, the being of the faceness. It doesn't contain the faceness of the face. Clear for everybody? Okay, so now, like that, when you're sitting just with yourself, the conscious being that you are, and you have a mind, which is going to be the mirror, we're likening the mind to the mirror, right? The mind says, I am a conscious being, and besides that, it can have many perceptions and thoughts, or thought flow is going on, and there's a, you know, running commentary going on. And there's also the I thought, I am the running commentary, I am thinking about this, I am seeing this, I am my mind, say it's intellectualizing and talking about the situation here. So, you know, I am a conscious being, I am my mind, I am thinking about this, I am feeling this and that, okay? And all of this activity, you know, is known. All of it is known. We could say all of it is reflected, if I wanted to use that word. It's a little tricky word, but we can use it for now. All of it is reflected. Every single thing is known by me. Right? It is known by me, I can say. Just a start. That'll go away in a minute. But
it is known by me because it's not known by anybody else, right? So I'm the awareful being. I am the awareful being of this, of these thoughts. Look at our language. I'm very serious here. I really want you to be looking inside. I'm the knower of the thoughts. The thoughts, if I can say that I'm the knower of the thoughts, what I really want to say is the thoughts are known. The thoughts are known, right? Even the I thought is known. Right? These are my thoughts. All of these words I can say. Now the question is, do these thoughts, and then the one who says, I am the thought, which is also known, do these thoughts have being in and of themselves? And what we would say is, no. Just like the mirror, right? Just like the mirror, when I remove the mind, if I were to remove the mind, what is left is the being that illumines the mirror. Now, if I were to remove the mind, what is left is the being or the consciousness, the conscious being, because of which that mind is known. Make sense? Why we use the idea of reflection in the mirror? Because there's my face in the mirror. The mirror can then say, you know, I am. The mirror can say, I am the face. Sounds ridiculous from the standpoint of the mirror. How can the mirror say, I am the face? Well, because the face is there in the mirror. How can I say, here with my mind, I am the conscious being? Well, because consciousness is there in the mind. The face is there in the mirror. Consciousness is there in the mind. Right? And so the mind can say, I am that. But actually, what we talk about in terms of viveka or discrimination, the mirror, the mind itself, is something which is known and something which is changing and something which is labeling, all of which come and go. All of that phenomena comes and goes. The knownness which the mind enjoys, the being which the mind enjoys, doesn't come and go. So if I take away the mind, everybody see this? If I take away the mind, the one that's illumining it remains exactly the same. As long as I am there, if the mirror is there, if the mind is there, that mind is going to be enjoying me. Just as long as my face is there, the mirror is there, that mirror is going to be enjoying me as though. It means I seem to be in the mirror. But if I take away the mirror, I haven't been taken away. So just think about this. I've got the mirror. My face is in the mirror. Is it? It seems to be. But if I take away the mirror, I haven't been taken away. Neither has my face. If the mirror is taken away, it's not like the reflection of the face goes with it, even. Right? The mirror can't even take the reflection of the face, let alone the face. So now think about your thought. You have a thought. The thought goes. What does it take with it? When the thought goes, what does it take with it? It doesn't take me with it. It doesn't even take knownness with it, because the knownness just remains, illuminating now the next thought that's come. The knownness remains. Say you have an emotion. And then look at the emotional level of the mind. The emotion comes. And now that emotion is known. Another thought comes and says, oh, I am the emotion. Say a sad emotion comes. Now that is known. And now with the complexity of the mind, another thought comes and says, I am sad. And now I am sad is known. See what I mean? Not just sad is known. It's sad plus I am sad is known. Right? And then that passes. And now another thought comes. A not sad thought. Okay? And the mind, then the next thought comes called the Ahankara notion, which is, I am not sad. Now the not sad thought is there, and I am not sad. And that is known. What never changes is me. What never changes is me. I am the ness or the being which all of these changing thoughts enjoy. When the thought goes away, right, or when the mirror goes away, what is left is just me. So now think about this in terms of what we call the jiva. We can say there are many jivas. In the whole Tat Tamasi, that thou art, you are Brahman, you are that. The you that they're referring to is you, the one who thinks you're a jiva. The jiva is the mind. It's like the mirror that's owning the being, the stable being that illumines it. That's what makes for a jiva. There is no jiva, really. There's no real entity jiva. Just like there's no face in the mirror. Jiva means that living, transmigrating soul. Just like there's no face in the mirror, there's no such being there. Right? You see it there, but there's no being there. You see it there, there's no being there. You are the being. Like that with the mind. Right? You see yourself there, reflected as though. That's why the mind itself says, I am the conscious being. That itself is known. But it's that ahankara that comes along and says, just a thought, comes along and says, I am, talking about the mind, the mind-body complex, I am the conscious being. Right? That is the limited jiva. That thought that's based in ignorance. That thought takes the limitless you, that nitya upalabdhi, that limitless consciousness, and makes you into a limited being. How can it make you into a limited being? Well, it can't. But ignorance is very, very powerful. Because if I don't know myself, the mind doesn't know me, right? Doesn't know the nature of my being, then it can say, I am limited. Because it can say, the I, which in fact is properly labeling consciousness, the conscious being, but it's taking that conscious being and superimposing it on the mind, and superimposing the mind on the conscious being, and then the mind says, I am a limited being. And then the mind behaves as though I am a limited being. Then the mind fears, you know, and wants and needs and looks out at the world. I am a limited being. All things are different from me. And Ishwara is somewhere else. God is somewhere else. That's what happens. That's the tremendous power of ignorance. We can't take ignorance lightly. There's so many different stories around the power of ignorance. If just the simplest one is the rope snake. There are two people walking along a path and desk. Two boys are walking along, and one trips over a rope and mistakes it to be a snake. He doesn't see a rope there. He sees a snake. And because he sees a snake, his mind sees a snake there. His whole reality, then, is built around a snake, not a rope. It doesn't matter that it's only a rope. I mean, it matters a lot, actually. You know, because it's a huge relief for that boy when he finds out from his friend, hey, come back, please look, it wasn't a snake. You know, it's only a rope, you're not going to die. You're not going to die. You know, it wasn't, you were bit by the twigs. The twigs off the rope. You know. And he comes back and he sees the rope and he feels huge relief. That's the power of ignorance and knowledge. When he didn't, it's not pure ignorance. This is our situation. It's such an incredible situation. When that boy walks along, he sees three bins. He sees the diameter, the bins. He sees an object there. But he doesn't see the object as rope. And so what happens is that object lends itself for superimposition. Because the knowledge, the object is there without the knowledge. That's our situation. I am here without self-knowledge. The rope is there without knowledge of the rope. I am here without knowledge of myself. And since I am here and I am my own experiences, I am a conscious being, me, this me that I take to be me, whenever you say I am, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, you're talking about you, the conscious being that you are. But this conscious being that you are, you don't know who you are. You know yourself in terms of your own experience. I am a conscious being. Right? I am me. So you refer to yourself all the time. So the ahankar, the I notion, is always saying I am and landing on you, the conscious being. But then if you were to say, but who am I? This is what all of the, in the Upanishad, the student always goes to the teacher, here I am, but who am I? Who is this person, me? They're not talking about somebody else. They're talking about me. Who am I? I don't know. So that's the mind situation. The mind, every thought that you have, it is known. There's a subject-object relationship there in the sense that it's illumined. This thought is known, this thought is known, this thought is known, this perception is known, this perception is known, this emotion is known, this emotion is known. All of them are known. Who's the knower? It's the nature of me, the subject. The ahankara, the I notion, doesn't know. The mind doesn't know that. And so when the mind has a thought, I am, it is labeling, I am the conscious being. But who is that? I, the conscious being, am me, the mind. So I am my mind. And that's what it does. Because the mind enjoys consciousness. And then this mind seems to exist in the body. So I am the body mind. And the body mind has sense organs. So I'm a body. I am a mind with a body. I'm a body with a mind that has sense organs. And you are a body with a mind that has sense organs. And there we are, samsara. This is exactly our situation. You know? But then if somebody were to ask you, well, who are you really? Who is the one who has a body, mind, sense organs? What? Yes, who is the one? Who are you? The conscious being. And that's where knowledge has to come in here to differentiate the conscious being that you are from the mirror, from that in which you seem to appear. I say you seem to appear because these appearances keep leaving and you're still there. Right? If you really belong to the appearance, then when the appearance left, you'd be gone. But you seem to always be appearing in these appearances. The appearances go and you're still there. So yes, you are still there, just like when the mirror goes, nothing at all has happened to you. In fact, nothing in the mirror has any being apart from the face in the mirror has no faceness apart from your face. And all of the changing phenomena that you experience in terms of the mind, the thoughts in your mind, they have no being, nothing, apart from you. They all come and go and come and go and come and go. Consciousness, your being, doesn't come and go, it's nitya. The conscious being that you are is nitya. It means free from time. There's no past, present, or future. There's no change. Change takes place in that which is changing. Change takes place, time takes place, in that which comes and goes. Right? The only what's not consciousness being doesn't come and go. All of the objects come and go. All of these known things come and go. You don't. And so you are nitya, timeless. Past, present, or future belongs to what changes, not to the very being that illumines change. So that's what he says. This verse, this jiva, really is just this chidabhasa. It's the reflection of consciousness in the mind. The appearance is the appearance of consciousness in the mind. It has no more reality, no more substance, no more being than the face in the mirror. You, the one that lends the face to the mirror, right, are not harmed when the mirror goes away. That's how much you've lent your face to the mirror. Right? Not at all. You have not attached yourself to the mind or to the thoughts or to the perceptions or to the feelings. They come and go. You don't. But this is the differentiation that has to be made. And it's a differentiation that has to be made here and now with the being that you are, with the being that you identify with right now as being you. There's no far out, capital S, self to reach. There's a recognition when the student comes to the teacher in the Upanishads, please teach me who I am. It goes with all humility to the teacher, who am I? They don't mean who is some self for me to reach. Who am I really? The one when I say I am, this conscious being, what is my nature? And so this verse saying, your nature is limitless awareness, free from time, which doesn't come and go, is not capable of being changed by the vrittis, by the thought modifications, which reflect you in it. And even when you say reflect you in it, as though the reflection has any substance at all, it has no more substance than the face in the mirror. And the face when the mirror goes away and the reflected face goes away. What is the loss for you? Nothing. Similar, if we take it one more step, if you think of a dream. You have a dream. You have a whole, just created a whole universe there. And you may even be a character in it. Whole universe, whole complex story going on there. Right? The alarm goes off. That universe is gone, like that. What is your death experience? That scene has been removed. That situation, that creation has been removed. Have you been removed? Has there been the slightest iota of change in you? The same thing. It's exactly the same thing. So what we mean by nitya means that which is free, absolutely free from time, free from change. You say, once you say that yourself is nitya, is free from time, free from change, the next word that must come is asanga. Asanga means unattached. It's not untouched. Not only asanga, untouched. Shuddhi. Shuddha means absolutely pure. Nothing can touch you. Because free from change. Free from change, you are what you are. It means as you are, period. There's nothing to change. That means nothing can touch you, right? That means, and that means that with all of this activity that's going on, if you were attached to it, it would be changing you. So you have to be asanga. Your being has to be free. Right? And so then, as we'll see later, then what is this asanga? This asanga. This unattached, totally unattached, nitya, changeless self that I am. Now, all this verse is giving us is that this asanga self that I am is not changed at all by the reflection in the mirror. In fact, the only reality that the reflection in the mirror, the reflection in the mind, enjoys is my being. And look at it this way. The experience that I'm having of myself is not being given to me by the mirror, by the mind. My self-experience, the me, is not being given to me by the mind. The self-experience, the being itself, the conscious being, right,
is its own light. Right? It is its own self-experience. Self-experience on the subject-object. But because consciousness is consciousness, existence is existence, existence is consciousness, consciousness is existence. I am my own light. I am not being contributed to by the mind. It's not because there is a mind that I shine. It's not because there is a mind that I am known. I am known by my own nature. And because I am known, anything within my vicinity is known. I am known as pure consciousness, as being, and therefore all things are known. So when we were doing that meditation, to realize that as you're sitting there, we have such a strong dehatma buddhi, identification with the body, right? That I can say, oh, these are distant sounds, distant to the body, distant sounds to the room. They're not distant sounds to awareness. There's no distance between awareness, right, and the sound, or awareness and any given perception. In fact, all things are known. Anything that comes into my field is equally known. It doesn't matter if whether it's far or near. There is no far or near from the standpoint of awareness. There's far or near from the standpoint of the body. But from the standpoint of awareness, the body is in my awareness, the sense organs are in my awareness, the mind is in my awareness, all the perceptions are in my awareness. There's nothing that's not in my awareness. I could also say like this, the self is known, consciousness. The body is known, the sense organs are known, the perceptions are known, the mind is known, the objects are known, the sounds are known, the universe is known. There's nothing that's not known. That's because I am the whole. I am the knownness. I'm the knownness of the known. I'm the consciousness or the awareness of the known. And nothing's away from that. So I have to break this, in a sense, through knowledge, this dehatma buddhi. Because what that does is make it seem as though the conscious me, myself, which is really the faceness of the face in the mirror, that this me is somehow attached to this, and then looking out through these sense organs, a little me somewhere inside looking out through these sense organs at you through inert space or something like that, which is not our experience. We make it our experience because we don't think about it. We just take that for granted, but in fact it's not our experience at all. It's not our experience. Our experience is that actually everything is known. That's our experience. Our experience is everything is in consciousness, that there's nothing away from consciousness, including consciousness. Nothing away from consciousness, including consciousness. There's nothing but consciousness. Try to find something away from consciousness. There's nothing. That's our experience. But then, because of this dehatma buddhi, this identification with the body, I look out as though consciousness is within. It's not within or without. There's nothing away from it. There's nothing but that. It's different slant on things. So, okay, we'll stop there. Let's just take a minute. Let yourself relax just for a couple of minutes and just let your mind sit with what is most deeply you, your own being, your own sense of I, your own sense of self, of me, the conscious being that you are, that which is most deeply and personally you. The conscious being that you are most attached to, the self that is most you, that you are most attached to as your own being, the being that makes you you. Yeah, mukutvat. The faceness of the face, of the being of the face. Twa gives the abstract, either twa or ta, the ta affix, abstracts it. Like this, like if you have twa, because, it often translates as because of being a face, but here because of the faceness is better. Yeah. So you have the ness of it, yeah. Yeah.
In this example, the mirrors stand for the different minds.
So like the Buddhis. And it makes that clear in the Bhashya, yeah.
And it's like in the old days, because different mirrors have different appearances in the different ways, and maybe different colors, or different metals that they were made out of, and stuff like that.
Even in, I didn't do the commentary on this, but in the commentary it says, I didn't do the commentary of the Bhashya, I did the introduction. He says, like reflected in mirror, the many different types of mirrors. And then he goes on, he says, and also say the mirror has specks of dirt in it,
yeah.
Right? Then those specks of dirt themselves are superimposed on the face. You look in the mirror and it's dirty. Oh. It goes into that. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit more about this? Is this the chit? Is reflecting the jiva, and is that the third pada? Is that creating the jiva?
Well, actually, the buddhi, D stands for buddhi, which stands for the intellect. Okay, so you know the ahankara. So here you have the vritti, a thought modification. The thought modification is not away from consciousness, right? So it enjoys consciousness, but the ahankara will say, I am that conscious entity. And so whatever is in the vritti enjoys being known, right? That knownness is the consciousness. Okay, so that's the reflection. It enjoys being known, so we say that's the reflection. Then the I thought comes and says, I am the conscious being who is the vritti. Another way to explain that. In a thought modification, there's the what we call the nama-rupa, the name and form of the thought. And the name and form we label as known. Right? Like if I have a thought of a painting, I'll label the name and form painting as now the painting is known. So now, in reference to the objects in thought modification, awareness is labeled as known. In reference to the consciousness in the thought modification, the awareness is labeled as me, the knower, right? And then, in reference to the relationship between
the consciousness which I've labeled as the knower and the consciousness that I've labeled as the known, I'll call the act of knowing. So actually, the knower, knowing, and known are just three labels for the one consciousness that's being reflected in the vritti. And we say reflected because the vritti is known. However, if you were to, vritti means thought modification. If you were to get rid of the thought modification, what is left is the knownness, which is attributed to the vritti as a characteristic of it. But in fact, it's not. So we say it's reflected. Then the ahankara, the I notion, comes along and labels this situation, right, as I am the conscious being who is the knower in the mind. Did that answer?
How are you differentiating ahankara from jiva?
Well, there's not much. The ahankara is like the what is the jiva, the root of the jiva. The jiva really is brought about by ignorance of the self. And so the ahankara is the root of the jiva.
Okay.
That's the mistake. Yeah.
The root of it, or is it?
Yeah, you can say, well, yeah, let's put it like this. In reality, there's no jiva. There's only Brahman, right, the limitless self that you are. Okay. But self-ignorance is there. Okay. So I would say that would be better to say the root. But the core of the jiva is the ahankara, which is the I notion. The I notion has its basis in the self plus ignorance. Because the ahankara is properly rooted in the self in that it's not labeling anything else. But because ignorance is there, it is labeling the self and then adding something to it. I, the conscious being, that's so far so good, I, the conscious being, am the mind. I, the conscious being, am unhappy. I am sad. I am smart. I am stupid. I am a woman. I am a man. You know, I am young. I am old. It labels me, the self, which is Brahman, with either the object, like the body, or qualities of the object. I am this body, or I am, you know, 55 or whatever. I guess it's older than that now. You see what I'm saying? You know, or I am fat or I am thin. Right? Or I am my mind, or I am happy or I'm sad. I'm smart, I'm stupid, either with a quality or with the object itself. And the ahankara is the result of that ignorance. And so the core of it is that ahankara, which is caused by the self-ignorance. The important thing is to know, I think in really being able to gain knowledge, what is the most important thing to realize is that your ahankara is rooted in yourself. It's not labeling anything else. And self-knowledge is just removing the ignorance that makes you take this self, which is you, which is most dear to you as you, is the recognition that it is this self that is Brahman, that's limitless. This very me, you know, is Brahman. Do you see? Yeah. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I have another one.
Okay, go ahead.
And this is one aspect I do a lot of work with, but, so, the Brahman is reflected in the consciousness, and that creates this
mirror. Brahman's not reflected.
The consciousness.
Brahman is the consciousness.
Okay, the consciousness is reflected in the deep, which creates a face in the mirror.
When we say, let me work with that a little bit, because there's a limitation to the illustration, of the mirror illustration, so I want to make sure that we get that right. In the problem with the mirror illustration is that here's the mirror over here, and here's me, here's the mirror, and here's the reflection. So there's space in between. Right? Here, in reference to my situation, here's consciousness, and the mind is not away from that consciousness. Right? So there's not space in between. Okay. But now, this mind, what we call, if we want to look at the stuff of it, the sattva, the maya, okay? This mind changes, it comes and goes, it has no being of its own. And we can differentiate it from consciousness, because consciousness never changes. It's always the same. Thoughts change. Okay? Now, therefore, we can say this mind that is not at all away or separate from consciousness in any way, nevertheless, because it changes, it reflects consciousness in that every part of this mind is known. But it goes away, the thought goes away, and the knownness remains. Right? So the knownness that it enjoys doesn't belong to it. Do you see what I mean? But now when it's there, it belongs to it. That's what we mean by reflection. Now, another way, it's just a way of working with the language. It's not perfect, but you have to kind of see inside what it is. So it's not away, the reflection, the knownness is not at all away from the mind, but you can't say it really belongs to the mind because the mind is ephemeral in the sense that everything about it changes and goes and the knownness doesn't. So that's what we mean by reflection there.
Okay. And so taking that reflection.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a little bit diverging, but in interacting with other people, it's that reflection that two people are interacting with each other based on that reflection.
Okay, but just make sure that when you say, all right, the experience of the reflection doesn't belong to the reflection.
It doesn't belong, but at the same time, when...
Yeah, but so here we are. Well, here we are relating, yeah. Right? And here we are in this creation using our sense organs and everything. All of this is working just fine. That's true.
But I'm seeing your, and you know, I'm trying to use the analogy, okay. But I'm seeing your mirror in general.
Well, no. You're seeing my body with your sense organs, okay. And with your ears, you're hearing my sound, my voice. And then probably through my facial expressions and the light in my eyes, you're kind of, through inference and experience, knowing a lot more, too. Picking up a lot more, just energetically. And so that all of these things are perceptions within Maya. But now, if we were to analyze all of these perceptions, which are true on an empirical reality, they have their own order of reality. But if we were to analyze all these things, we would find that all there is consciousness. Mm-hmm. That the consciousness of this body, mind, sense organs, the intervening space in your body, mind, sense organs is only one being. But on this level, it's all very relational.
Mm-hmm.
But if I were to break this down?
If we were to break it down.
There would only be consciousness.
Just the normal consciousness of a normal person.
Yeah.
They're not breaking it down.
They don't have to.
No, and so, but is it, it's, you know, what they're perceiving when they see you.
Yes, through the sense organs, names and forms.
And that face that is seen in the mirror.
Yeah.
Is that they're perceiving that face?
No, they're not.
No. You are perceiving that face.
Well, the face in the mirror, now we have to take the face in the mirror as an example of the relationship of the mind to consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a personal example.
Okay.
But what you're not going to be seeing my mind's reflection of consciousness. You see your mind's reflection of consciousness. Then when you look at me, you see my body, my sense organs.
Through my own reflection.
Through your own sense organs. You're seeing my mind, you're seeing my body and hearing my voice, etc., through your sense organs. I'm seeing your body and hearing you through my sense organs, right? And your sense organs, as are my sense organs, are forming a thought modification in the mind, which then is illumined by awareness. And that's how you know me. That's how you're experiencing me, right? Your sense organs are forming a thought modification in your mind, which is illumined by awareness, okay? Same here. But the awareness that's illumining your thought modification and my thought modification is only one awareness.
So you've clarified.
Oh, yeah? Okay, good.
Okay. It's nice.
Well, that was profound.
How are you doing? Okay.
There's no inside or outside of consciousness, and it's not spatial. And I always come back to how difficult it is for the mind, or at least my mind, to not spatialize everything.
Yeah.
And I'm not, I guess the question is, I'm not even convinced that it actually can. Even though, I mean, it can sort of talk about abstract concepts like love and things that aren't spatial, but you know, when you're sitting in it here in your body and I'm listening to you, I mean, it's very, it's just very hard not to spatialize being, because it feels like, oh, I can feel it sort of everywhere-ness. You know, I mean, and we talk about that, how it's the substrate of everything. But I feel like there's this next step that my mind is having a lot of trouble taking. And that next step is to sort of let go of the space part of it.
Well, let's look at the kind of the, kind of paradoxical situation that my mind and all of my perceptions are spatial. In other words, if I have a thought in my mind, there's a right side to the thought and a left side, a top and a bottom. Right? As long as the thought has objects in it or can be differentiated, like, for instance, I have a thought of this room. You can see there's a right, there's a left, up, down, all kinds of things in it, dimension, everything. And in this thought that's being given to me, generated through my sense perception, there's all of this spatial dimension, and in every part of it is awareness. In other words, the walls in my awareness, the space is in my awareness, the body's in my awareness, that side's in my awareness, that side's in my awareness. And so I think, oh, I am in pervading all of this. So I'm going over here to the right, and I'm going over here to the left, and I'm going up here and down, and so I'm just pervading everything.
Yeah.
Okay? And I can see like that too, just like space is pervading everything. Space is spatial. And so like that, I'm pervading even space, and so I'm spatial too. Well, there's truth in it from the standpoint of the vritti, the thought modification, from the universe, because there's nothing in the universe that's away from the self. So from the standpoint of the universe, awareness is over here and awareness is over there. Okay? However, from the standpoint of you, this me, the one from whom the thought comes and into whom the thought resolves. Like I could say, okay, have a thought of a universe or have a thought of a big meadow and then don't have that thought. The consciousness itself is not spatial. Now, how am I going to get an understanding of an experiential, a recognition of this non-spatial self? Well, that's why we do this differentiation, so that I pull, for the time being, I pull my sense organs in, shut them down for the moment, you know, and then recognize that my mind is known, I got the universe is known, my body is known, my sense organs are known, the thoughts are known, and then I quiet the mind down so that I can now make this mind, withdraw it from all of its activity, and make it focus on just my own presence, just the me. Okay. So I withdraw all of the universe projection of the time-space. I withdraw it. So far, so good? Then you just focus on yourself, just the me, your own presence. And then ask, do I have a right side and a left side? Do I have an up? Do I have a down? Do I have dimension? Do I have a color? None of these questions have any relevance whatsoever. And that's when you, that's how you understand being free, spatially free. You have to get to that, your being,
just the me, your own presence. And then you ask, do I have a right side or a left side? There's no way to answer that. The words, the questions are inappropriate for your own self. That's where how you realize what we mean by not spatial. Because here, in recognizing the pervasiveness, nothing's away from awareness, then you're just seeing awareness spatially, and it's true, nothing's away from awareness, but everything is being defined from the standpoint of the upadhi, the conditioning agent. You get it?
Yeah.
And it's very important. A little exercise you can do that's kind of, you know, fun, I think it's fun, is to play with your imagination. And you just close your eyes and, you know, like imagine a meadow and with a sky and trees and fields, maybe animals running through. Just imagine that. And just, you know, play with that imagination for a while, recognizing that the entire imagination is in your awareness. Right? Then you can even extend the imagination. Imagine a huge sky with the stars or whatever, sun, clouds. That's all in your awareness. And then withdraw that imagination. Awareness hasn't become big or small. The dimension, the depth, the color, size, all of these things belong to the imagination, which comes and goes, projects, sustained, and is resolved. The Purnamada, right? Projects, sustained, and resolves. Awareness is not participating in that. But because there's nothing apart from awareness, just pure awareness, there's no place for that imagination. The place is a creation of the imagination. But none of the imagination, the time, the space, the dimension, can take place away from awareness because there is nothing but awareness. But when you're just with awareness at all, yourself, there's no dimension. Am I making it worse? No.
When you say presence, there's something about that word presence that helps me.
Your own presence.
Yeah.
So. Good.
Well, here when you say close your eyes, when you open your eyes, presence is there. When you close your eyes, presence is there. When you create your imagination,
same.
Yeah. Presence is there. Yeah. And it contracts, it's no longer there. Presence is still there.
Yeah, that's nice. That's very nice. Ravi? Nothing? Okay.